So welcome back to the Vox Pop, everybody. WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Shartok. It's now been 11 days since David Sweat and Richard Matt escaped from the maximum security Clinton Correctional Facility in Dannemora, New York. Search teams continue to comb the woods of northern New York looking for the two convicted murderers. More than 800 law enforcement officers are involved in the search. New York State Police say they've gotten more than 1,000 leads, but so far, there are no sightings of the pair. While the search committees continue to focus on the area between Dannemora and Plattsburgh, it might just be that the two murderers are long gone. There are any number of theories. What's yours? I want to know what you think about the lady in question, Joyce Mitchell. I want to know what you think is wrong with the prison system that might have led to this. I want to hear from you. Now, here's the truth of the matter. There's you and there's me. And then there's Susie Chekai, who will answer your telephone calls, and Zach Malloy, who's running the board. But I can tell you this much. There is no question that this is something that has caught the fascination of the entire country and maybe the world about these guys getting away. So are they in Mexico? I don't think so. One of them has a warrant out there. There's a contemporary theory that maybe they would want to go to Italy. I'm going to Italy sooner or later. I hope I don't meet them. So I think a lot of people think that at any point there's mass hysteria. They could walk into any house anywhere and sort of hold you at gunpoint or something of that kind. And, you know, that's part of what is going on here. Anyway, I'm very interested in what you have to say. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org or you can do what everybody should do. Get on the phone, 1-800-348-2551. There is a report this afternoon that they were going to, we've heard this before, murder Mitchell's husband. And there was also a report that, you know, she got she decided not to do it and got cold feet, but she's going to be going to jail, obviously, for a long time. Let's go to Kerry in Plainfield, 1-800-348-2551. I want your calls, and I want them now. Let's go to Kerry. Okay, Kerry, you're on.
Hi, Alan.
Hey.
Two quick questions, okay?
Yeah, but I don't know the answers.
Well, that's what, anyways, first of all, these guys, they cut a hole through their cell wall to gain entrance to an area where the steam pipe was. And I assume they were cellmates. However, I never heard of any report confirming such.
I don't think they were cellmates. I think that they both worked in the tailor shop. I think they were close to each other in the cell block, but at least that's my impression. I'm sure there will be people who are following this much closer than I who will be able to help you with that one. And then what's the second question?
Probably a little more important, but anyways, I was wondering New York State policing policies. Okay, let's say the police do spot them, and these guys, they take off like two scared deer. They're running. I wonder, my question is, New York State police policy, would they have the authority to shoot even though, I mean, they're dangerous, extremely dangerous, convicted, fleeing felons, but if they're not even sure if they're armed or not, do they have the authority to shoot them?
Well, let me put it this way. I doubt very much that they don't have that authority. I mean, after all, you just pointed it out quite correctly. These are people who have murdered other people. One dismembered another guy. They escaped from a prison. Are you kidding? Of course they will have the power to do that.
I would hope so.
But the way
things are today lately with shootings and unarmed people and stuff like that, there'd be a big ruckus over that too, but I would hope not.
There's always a ruckus. But Kerry, I'm sure somebody will answer the cellmates question for you as we go on. 1-800-348-2551. Thank you, Kerry. Okay, and let's go to John. John in Albany. John, you're on.
Yeah, two questions. Is the Clinton Correctional Facility accredited by the American Correctional Association? And did Ms. Mitchell receive the mandatory training for civilian employees and their relationships with inmates?
I hope, John, that you're asking that question for the greater people who are listening, because I have no idea whatsoever.
Well, it's
hard to believe that the prison isn't accredited. It's, you know, when it was built, right?
Yeah, 1845.
It was literally built before the Civil War.
It's 45.
It's been there for a long time. You know, I have a feeling there's training and there's training, what you tell people when they take these jobs. But those are two good questions, and I appreciate them very much. John, who do you fault for this mess?
Oops, sorry, I'm driving.
Okay, bye. Talk to you.
Bye.
Don't get arrested. Okay, we'll go to Kay in Schuylerville. Hey, Kay, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Chertok. It's so lovely to talk to you, although it's a poor occasion.
Yes.
About the lady, I think she got lucky when she turned herself in. I think her end would probably have been a shallow grave somewhere.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah.
Well, it certainly is possible.
Yes. Well, they're not nice guys. As to where they went, I think they probably went to Canada. And I think there was another person or persons involved.
Sure.
And
What makes you say that? What makes you say that you think there are other people involved?
Well, I saw something with Dog the Bounty Hunter, and he had pictures. And by my, that really looked like the guys. They were in the store up there. I hope they get them there. A dangerous pair.
Well, they are.
Yeah, as to what will get them, I think they may very well trip themselves up. Mm-hmm. They're criminals, and they're ruthless. And they're going to get overconfident, and they'll somehow expose themselves with something ghastly, and we'll get them. Are they going to go free? I don't think they'll go free for long.
In the long run.
Yeah.
And they even got Whitey Bulger after 35 years.
It took a little time, but they got him.
Yeah. 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 It's interesting. I think that they're very bright. They were bright enough to figure this whole thing out, and they were bright enough to figure out how to do it. And my bet is you're right that they weren't going to just break out. They had to have somebody on the other end, right?
Yeah. I don't even think she maybe was plan A. I think she may have been plan B. You're right. They're very smart. They planned this all very well.
What do you think about her?
Pitiful.
She's pitiful.
She's ruined her life for nothing. And it was just utterly pitiful. And she's going to pay before they do.
Well,
I feel for her family. I really do.
Yeah, no, you can feel for the family.
Yeah.
And you can also, you know, do something about thinking about who she is. I mean, you know.
It's too late for that. She's ruined her life. She just ruined it.
Oh, without question.
Yeah.
Hey, Kay, I thank you very much.
Thank you. This has been really interesting, and I'm looking forward to hearing what everyone else says.
Yeah, but right now, nobody else is calling.
No kidding. So,
yeah, that's why I've been stalling with you.
I'd love to talk about anything you want to talk about.
Thanks, Kay. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Yeah. Bye-bye.
So your chances of getting in now are 100%. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Joining us now in the studio is my compatriot, my friend, and quite frequently, you know, a guy who sets me straight on things, Mr. Raymond Graff.
Okay, well, this is a long email that came in from John.
Yeah.
And I'm going to read this for you. It may well take us to the break.
Well, the break's almost here.
Concerning the search near Caddyville, New York, for the escaped prisoners, I wonder if your news team has analyzed the geometry of the search area. The importance of this is illustrated by the following example. Suppose it is suspected that the escapees are in a rectangular area measuring 2 miles by 1 mile, and that a team of 800 police officers are engaged in the search that lasts for 5 days. Suppose further that 600 officers are engaged in the important task of patrolling the 6 mile perimeter. That leaves 200 officers for handling logistics, traffic, the K-9 unit, the helicopters, protection of houses, and the media. With 600 officers patrolling the 6 mile perimeter, there would be, on average, one officer every 52.8 feet. But the officers need to sleep and eat, and are, I understand, on duty 12 hours each day. So that leaves 300 officers on perimeter duty for an average of one officer every 105.6 feet. What would happen if a larger force searched for only 8 hours? Just to make sure. This is a Common Core test. What would happen?
I was going to say, it sounds just like the Regents exam.
What would happen if I'm only in paragraph two. What would happen if a larger force searched
for... Well, there are five people on the phone while we're at it.
Well, you just have to wait. What would happen if a larger force searched for only 8 hours, just to make sure that the escapees cannot break out of the search area undetected? Suppose we double the size of the officers on perimeter duty, which requires an additional 600 officers. Suppose we also lined up a further 1,056 officers along with one width of the search search area, that would be one officer every 5 feet. Now, let these 1,056 officers slowly walk the 2 miles to the opposite side of the rectangle, searching inside the area as they go. Suppose they take 8 hours to reach the other side. This comes to a searching 660 feet per hour, or 11 feet per minute, or 1 foot per every 5.5 seconds. This requires a total of 800 plus 600 plus 1,056 equals 2,456 officers, or slightly more than 3 times the actual number of 800 officers, but they would finish the job in 8 hours, which is 1/15 of the 5 days used by the 800 searchers. The above numbers and assumptions are just plausible guesses on my part. Well, now you tell me. Why didn't you put that they were guesses before I read 2 huge paragraphs? John, a retired math professor. John, dude, get a hobby.
Just like the Regents exam. Anyway, we have to take a break, but it'll take about 7 seconds. The phones are ringing. We'll give everybody a chance, but let's go.
Support comes from the Wild Center, offering member previews of Wild Walk, 1,000 feet of elevated bridges and experiences in the Adirondack treetops. Wildcenter.org for details. Hubbard Hall, Cambridge, New York, presenting summer programs for young artists, introducing the skills of musical theater and acting for ages 5 to 18, June 29th through July 25th. HubbardHall.org for registration. Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost 3 decades. ShannonRose.com. Interim Healthcare, supporting the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy and its Summer Solstice Festival on the Rail Trail, Saturday, noon to 4 p.m., featuring performers, animals, crafts, vendors, food, and more, SolsticeCelebration.org. Haydenville Woodworking and Design, a group of artisans designing and building renovations, additions, new homes, custom cabinets, and furniture for over 30 years. HaydenvilleWD.com for virtual portfolio. And Pirates Lakeside Grill on Nassau Lake, serving local grass-fed beef, Milwaukee hot dogs and sausages, beer-battered fish fry, and handmade milkshakes. PiratesLakesideGrill.com.
And we are back, thanks to Zach the engineer. Thank you, Zach, for bringing us back, and thank you to Susie for answering the phones. And let's really get this thing done. All 5 phones are ringing. As soon as somebody hangs up, you dial again, and then you're in. Or you can email us at voxpop@wmc.org. Let's go to Olivia in Albany. So, Olivia, do you know where they are?
In Albany.
You think so? What would lead you to that conclusion?
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
You're in Albany. Do you know where they are?
I have a hunch that maybe one of them could be on a cargo ship on their way to Europe. And I don't know why I feel that way, but I don't feel like they're in the area. I think the number of officers is suspicious. I feel like this whole thing is suspicious and that it's a lot more, I think it's a lot more sinister.
Like
being organized.
Yeah.
I mean, you can call me a conspiracy theorist on this one,
yeah.
But I think it's kind of deep here. Yeah. So I'm just waiting it out, but I don't feel like they're in the area, and I keep feeling like one of them is on a ship somewhere. I don't think they're together.
Yeah. Well, it would make sense that they weren't, but when you said earlier, do you know where they are? And you said in Albany, I thought maybe that would be appropriate considering what some people are thinking about the legislature, you know. But in any case, thank you very much, Olivia. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Bye. Let's go to Paula in Woodstock. That leaves 1 free phone. Let's go to Paula in Woodstock. Paula.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Sure.
I was just listening how they are going to enact some emergency legislation. I heard that on the news earlier today in reference to this type of situation where they were like fraternizing and
right.
Being able to be alone with this woman and what have you, and they're going to quickly.
Well, if you believe what they were hearing, they both had sex with her. Now that's really something, if that's one of the allegations that we're hearing about, that's extraordinary that they would, and they were thrown under the bus by fellow employees who told the inspector general what was going on, and nothing happened.
You know, it's very interesting because. You know, and just with the exception of a few movies, you know, we really don't know what goes on in these prisons in reference to the different rooms or the facilities or the activities or what have you. And, you know, a lot of people can think of, like, oh, you're in prison and you're in a jail cell and then you go to the cafeteria and that's it. I mean, perhaps. But, you know, my concern is that I'm worried about a backlash type of form of legislation that could potentially penalize other inmates that are towing the line, that are not acting inappropriately, where they'll say, oh, if you're a felon, then you can't do this thing anymore. And that concerns me. I'm, you know, these people are in there for very long periods of time, and whatever type of quality of life that they can have that is a diversion or an activity, I think, that is critically important.
Well, Paula, let me interrupt for a moment and say, I think what's happening is everybody in authority is looking for a way out of this. I think you make a very good point. And so what right now, emergency legislation, the whole prison, to make your point, to solidify your point, is the whole prison was on lockdown. Everybody else, for these two jokers go, and everybody else in the prison is on lockdown and can't move. As a result of it. But I think that you make a very good point. Paula, thanks. We got five people behind you. I appreciate it.
One last thing, Alan.
Okay, sure.
You know, I am very adamantly opposed to solitary confinement.
Right.
I don't understand why that is still allowed to happen to prisoners.
Well, my question then would be really quickly, because I do want to get to everybody else, is suppose somebody really does a serious infraction of the rules, right? What do you have left?
Well, I was just reading where there was an inmate that had been, it was like 18 or 19 years old, who'd been in solitary confinement for 2 years for stealing a backpack.
Terrible.
So, I mean, solitary confinement for 2 years?
Yeah.
I just personally find that
No, it's a matter of how it's administered. Thank you, Paul.
Appreciate your call.
Right.
All right.
Let's go to James in Loudonville. James, you're on.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Schatzhag. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great, sir. So you mentioned at the top of your program, the question you asked is, how could this have happened? Well, that's my question, too. I believe that there had to be a serious breakdown in the system since we had a 160-year history of the system working. Now, well, the system did not work. So what broke down? These guys are in lockdown after 10 o'clock in the evening. You have a guard who, or a CO who's working that block, who must make rounds, must identify that everybody is in their bed, and must record that every 30 minutes, from what I understand. Okay, and then they go and they take a 20-minute break, and then they do it again. So how did these individuals break these walls down, okay, given that time frame? How did these guys continue to do this? This didn't happen overnight. This is an ongoing process to where they got to being running free right now. So how did this system break down? Now, since that, there's also a sergeant on duty who supposedly checks this person's work and agrees with it before he hands it off to his lieutenant, who says, yes, this is what he did do before they get it to the superintendent. So it worked for 160 years. Why did it not work this last couple of weeks?
And your answer to the question, James, is?
There's a breakdown in the system where things have gotten lax. Things have gotten really lax as far as these two being in an honor block. One guy who dismembered another human being and another one who killed a cop earned their way into an honor block. There's a breakdown in the system where a woman who is being brought up and her investigated for fraternizing with prisoners goes back to the same place to go to work with nothing that happens. What is going on? Is this a prison?
We do know one thing, James, and that is your point is well taken, because we do know that they were that they had been turned in for this fraternization. And and nobody took it seriously.
Well, not seriously enough to do anything about it.
Yeah.
But once again, being in a situation like that, being in an institution, I understand how everybody protects themselves. The COs protect themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Sergeants protect themselves. Everybody needs to protect their particular thing. So with that said, once again, it led to a breakdown. Now, 99 years from now, it probably won't happen again. But it was a perfect storm where it happened this particular time, and superintendent right down the road has got to go.
Okay. Well, thank you, James. I think one of the things that we know is well enough is that Andrew Cuomo is furious about this, and everybody, including him, is trying to get out from under responsibility. But the system, you know, I mean, there are people who are pointing fingers at him and saying he's not spending enough money on the prisons.
I don't know about enough money. He closed six prisons, but nobody got laid off. So it's not a question of they didn't have enough personnel. The average guy makes $75,000 a year. It's not a question about money.
Would you do it for $75,000 a year? I wouldn't.
My brother was the president of the unions. He founded that Nice Cova. I got family involved in that many, many times. And to answer your question directly, no, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah. James, you're done. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Arthur in Gilderland. Arthur, you're on.
Mr. Shartok, hi, this is Arthur. Kind of a legal question. Do you think that this Ms. Mitchell could be held responsible for an additional crime? Let's say these guys showed up somewhere, committed a murder, committed, you know, a felony. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't have the slightest idea. I don't know, but it's an interesting concept.
There's
no question. If they find out, and I think they pretty well have now, that she was an accomplice in getting them out of there, then I don't know what the fruit of the poison tree, as they say on Law and Order, would be. In other words, if they do another crime, is it her fault that, in part, because they're out of there? And I read in the paper today that she could pretty well expect a 7-year sentence,
right,
you know, for what she's done. I just think, you know, I have no idea what in the world would allow a human being to act in that way. But she did. Hey, Arthur, it's a good question. Maybe somebody else will answer it for you. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yep. Okay. Let's go to Ann in Ulster County. Ann, you're on.
Hi there, Alan.
Hey.
I'm surprised that everybody is hanging their dirty socks on this woman to dry. I'm surprised they haven't equated her with Helen of Troy in some crazy cinema movie.
Whoa. Are you telling me, Anne, that you think you have some sympathy for her?
I have sympathy for everyone involved, and I have long held the theory that no one is born with a scarlet letter on them that says you're going to be a bank robber or this or that. Yeah. A lot of things go wrong, and I would like to know a lot more about these two people and their background. I mean, they've gone into every other direction and politics and whatever. What made these men what they are, you know?
And her, and also her, right? I mean, no question.
Well, she looks like a sad case, and I'm sure there's not that much opportunity for anything in that area. It's rather, you know, quiet.
Well, Ann, one of those guys not only killed somebody, but then dismembered him. You know, the real question is, no matter what has happened to somebody along the line, and I'm with you on that, whether or not there's a point at which you say, in this civilization, you may not. And if you do, we will either kill you. Some states do that. Salt Lake is now doing it. Utah is now doing it by firing squad. And then we won't have to worry about your escaping. Or we were going to put you, as Mario Cuomo used to say, in a cell. And the only thing you'll hear is the sound of the toilet all day long. That's what he used to say. And he was a liberal. So, I think my objection to what you're saying is not that you're not a good soul and that we shouldn't know what their psychiatric or psychological background is, but that sooner or later you gotta hold people responsible.
You do, but I think there should be intervention before that. We always seem to wait until something's at a critical point, and then you go hysterical like the legislation that you were talking
about.
Yeah.
Good point.
There's got to be a better way to do it.
Well, Ann, everybody wants to check in, and I thank you for your doing it. And it's a very important point you're making. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Let's go to James. Okay, James.
Good afternoon. One of the biggest problems of the breakdown was complacency. Everybody got very complacent in their jobs. Bad idea. You've got to stay on your toes at all times. Two, yes, any crimes that those two boneheads commit on the outside, she will be held as an accomplice. So if they do kill somebody, she will be held as an accomplice. And three, I really don't care about touchy-feely feelings. If you act like an animal in society, you will be treated as such. I'm sick and tired of hearing, oh, poor, pitiful me, and we got to feel for them. We got to understand them. No, they are murderers. They belong in a small jail cell. And if you want to act up in prison, if you're going to get stuck in solitary confinement, that means you will not be able to hurt anybody else. Because prisoners like to kill each other for nothing better to do.
James.
That's ridiculous. Yes, sir.
James, I think you made yourself very clear. Thank you very much for the telephone call. Appreciate it.
Have a wonderful day, sir.
You too. Okay. Let's go to Tom in upstate New York. Tom.
Hi, Alan. Somebody asked some questions of whether they were cellmates or not.
Great.
I would think that they probably were, because if you look at the size of that cut, where it was made was underneath someone's bed. Okay? And it was almost the size of the bed. For them to do this to the adjacent cell, they would have had to go in.
But you don't know, right? I don't. My point was, Tom, James, that I don't know.
I think you can surmise that they probably were. The other thing that I don't understand is when you're cutting through that kind of steel, I mean, one of the ways that these guys get attention is they just start banging on the steel, and you can hear it all over the cell block.
Yeah.
And,
understands that one.
I think they were probably in their cells at a time when they were doing some construction work, and when there was noise going on, they did their cutting.
Sure. But you don't know. See, I don't know, so I say I don't know, and you don't know either. But
do know that everybody that works in the prison that has to go through an orientation program, and one of the things that is constantly stressed is that if you have any type of sexual relationship with a prisoner, you number one will be fired immediately. Number two. By law, since prisoners have no rights, you will be put on the predator list as a child molester for the rest of your life.
What if they're not a child they had sex with?
The point is they don't, but every place they move to, they have to live in a completely sub...
Well, you could be a molester.
Type relationship.
Yeah. I get it.
But the point is, if they get caught for anything and they find out that they're on the predator list, where do you live if you haven't reported? They're immediately going back to jail.
Okay. Hey, Tom, thank you. You should see all these lights going off here. Appreciate it.
Well, it's good to hear that.
Yeah, bye.
And by the way, there is an incredible sense of secrecy. And one of the things is you don't ask and you don't tell, and that just goes through all of the officers, because the repercussions that can occur to somebody who tells is overwhelming.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Right.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
Yeah. Bye. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Diane in New Salem. Hey, Diane, you're on.
Hi, Alan. I worked in a medium security prison in Massachusetts, and I was appalled at the freedom that this maximum security prison gave lifers. I think they just had too much license to roam around and connect. I think that's one of the major problems, that they were just complacent in letting these maximum security prisoners do what they did.
Now, Diane, I wanted to ask you something that I don't quite get. You worked in a prison. Obviously, there's always a balance. You know, if things get too tense, you risk, you know, Attica or one of the other things that have blown up. So what we're talking about here are two miscreants who misbehaved very badly, but they misbehaved. But everybody else hasn't. So the question then would be, is it working? Is there a right sort of balance? You're saying there isn't, but is there a right sort of balance at which people feel that they can go on and have some kind of a life, even though it's behind the walls?
They don't have to be in solitary confinement. I don't agree with that. But I don't think they should have the social activities and the wherewithals to roam around and make connections.
Okay, but Diane, only because we have to take a break, I wanted to ask you a real fast question. I'm really glad you're calling. You worked in a prison. You know what we've heard about this business about, you know, sexual conduct between a staff member. And have you ever seen anything like that?
I have.
You have.
And, Alan, the only other thing I wanted to say was, in regards to the search for these two, I think it would be very foolish on their part if they haven't split up.
Oh, yeah. I would think you're right.
But, okay, thank you, Alan.
But I think you're right. And Diane, and back to my other question, because we only have a second or two here. What happens, what happened in your experience when there was that kind of, you know, stuff going on between a staff member and a convict?
Well, the staff member was certainly let go.
I see.
Not much happened to the convict because, you know...
What could you do? Yeah.
What could you do? And it was his basic needs. It was just a basic needs thing. He wasn't held responsible.
Was it a he and a she?
Yes.
Interesting. Diane, thank you so much. Appreciate
Bye,
it.
Bye, Alan.
Yeah, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. We'll talk to Rick and Ben and Cindy and Jonathan, okay?
Support comes from Autobahn Service, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, offering service, repair, and diagnosis of imports, specializing in late model Volkswagen, Audi, and BMW. AutobahnTechnic.com. Upstate Divorce Mediation, specializing in helping couples who are seeking a legal separation or divorce. Offices in Albany, Saratoga, and Catskill. UpstateDivorceMediation.com. Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, plus collectibles and curiosities. Open 7 days a week, yeoldwarwickbookshop.com. The Hyde Collection, Glens Falls, this summer featuring the later drawings of Andy Warhol, 1973 through 1987. Organized by the Andy Warhol Museum, one of the Carnegie Museums of Pittsburgh. HydeCollection.org. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more. Where eyewear is an art. Facebook or visionexceleyecare.com. And Habitat Post and Beam, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, designing and manufacturing energy-efficient post and beam homes and additions throughout the Northeast since 1972. Postandbeam.com.
And we're back. We've been deluged with telephone calls. And I have in front of me four real fast notifications on the internet. Good afternoon. Those two escaped convicts are probably long gone. It's illogical they would have had such an organized plan to get out from the inside and not have an organized and elaborate plan to continue the escape on the outside. Even if Ms. Mitchell did help them, she could not have been alone. The plan is just too elaborate for her alone. Thanks from Mark. So, says another person, Alan, if those escapees showed up at your back door and were kicking it in, would you rather have a reliable gun or your little old dog? They are hiding at the governor's residence in Albany. Cuomo is never there. And from Daniel, it is common in the Adirondacks not to be able to find lost individuals who want to be found. Seems unlikely that such a well-thought escape would hinge on a shaky getaway driver and that the stood-up escapees would hang around the general area. Looks like the search command has little evidence and no idea how to move forward or admit failure. That's from Daniel. And then from Gina, early on, I heard a news report that a cabbie drove two men to the train station. Have heard nothing since. They could be anywhere. True, all true. 1-800-348-2551. All five phones are ringing. Let's go to Rick in Massachusetts. Rick, you're on.
Hi, Alan. As you had clearly stated on a media project, the photographer, all the photographs issued with Cuomo are official photographs. And if one looks at the photograph of where two gentlemen are examining the steam pipe.
Right.
The obvious question is, if you're laying inside... Now, I got several points I got to make on this, and I'll comment.
Rick, I am so sorry, and I know I'm frequently criticized for pushing people too hard, but we have five people who are waiting on the phone.
Yeah,
okay.
And if you're cutting from the inside on a pipe that you do not have an extension cord for your power tool, which would be a 7 or a 10-inch grinder or a skill saw, you're going to have to use a cordless.
Yeah.
The cordless, you're going to require a ton of batteries to cut through this.
Yep.
You're not going to be laying out a perfect square. That is a perfect square. How you laid out a perfect square on an inside curve is beyond me. Number one, when you do not have illumination in your container, and Alan, you can't fit in the pipe. Please look at the photograph. Secondly, while you're cutting through the insulation on the outside of the pipe. If you look at the photograph, you'll see that the pipe was, the insulation was removed, cleanly removed from the exterior of the pipe.
Wait, Rick. So you're telling us that they weren't in the pipe?
Somebody cleaned it up from the outside.
Yeah. Okay, but
It's a perfect machine shop cut. There are square corners. There's no overlap at the right angles. There is actually on the outside, if you look at the upper left-hand corner, you will see the soapstone marker mark. There is a white line. That's a soapstone marker.
Interesting.
You'll see it in the upper left-hand corner. There's a straight line there. Perfect right angles.
And do we know that this wasn't post hoc, propter hoc? In other words, that somebody didn't put that line there after...
No, this is official Cuomo. It's all over the place. And Alan, you have to remove the insulation. Yeah. The insulation is cleanly cut from the outside on the steam pipe.
Yeah. Okay,
there's
listen...
not a hole. If you're panicking and you're in a chamber where you're creating sparks, sulfur fumes from your cutting disc, as well as dust from the 2-inch layer of insulation on the outside, you're choking. You can't see where you're cutting. There's no way you're going to cut a straight line.
You made some great points. I appreciate your calling, and I didn't want to
come back to bite Cuomo, because somebody's after Cuomo on this. They want the prisons. There's too many questions. Start here asking questions back. That lady, Mitchell, she's a scapegoat.
Could be.
They set her up.
Thank you, Rick.
This is Iraq all over again.
Okay, Rick, thanks again. Okay, let's go to Ben in Williamstown. Ben, you're on.
Whoa, I feel so bad that I'm the next one after Rick.
Yes.
But I think that Jurassic Park came out last week, and when you try to hold people either in a facility or you try to hold people out, this is what happens. So I think that prisoners are always going to try to get out, and we have to have good enough fences to keep them in. But I'm going to segue this into our immigration policy, because if we keep on having a porous border, one day we're going to open up the newspaper and say, how did this happen? And we're all going to be wondering how this happened, because we don't have any good facility keeping people out.
Let's stay with the prison for a minute. You make an interesting point, and I want to stay with that for a second. And that is, that let's try to remember in proportion what's going on here. In other words, you have almost... no one ever escaping from that prison. And now you're generalizing to the point, if I'm listening, hearing you correctly, Ben, and I hope I am, you're saying, look, this is a terrible tragedy. They're letting people are getting out. But only two guys did get out.
That's wonderful that only two guys get out. We got lucky this time that it was only two guys. Next time we might not get so lucky. I think that, like your other caller said, everything has become obviously lax in this prison because they were successful for 160 years.
Yep.
That's wonderful. Everything is becoming too lax these days.
Well, you know what, Ben? The other caller said it. You've said it, and I appreciate it. I'm just trying to get everybody in. I hope you understand that, okay?
Have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much. Bye. Okay, we'll go to Cindy in Warwick. Okay, Cindy, you're on.
Hi, Ellen. I'm the wife of a corrections officer, and I just wanted to respond to Paula's comments as she was saying that, you know, as the public, we don't know what goes on inside these jails. We very much do know what goes inside jails and prisons because our husbands, our mothers, our aunts, our uncles work there. As for solitary confinement and the activities that these prisoners, he feels, need to have, these are murderers. These are rapists. These are child molesters. They're in jail for a reason. This is a federal prison they were in, so they were sentenced. They need to be there.
This was not federal. This is state. This is a state prison.
Oh, that was a state prison.
Yeah.
Either way.
Yeah.
Either way, they were sent off to a state prison. They were sentenced. It's not a jail. It was a prison.
Okay, but there was a point made, Cindy, that I wanted to ask you about, and I'm really glad you called, and I appreciate it as a spouse of a CO. And that is, there was a, an indication from at least one caller that there's not only a thin line in terms of what they call thin blue line in the fire in the police department, people don't squeal on each other. Is that true with COs too?
To an extent, yes, but there you have to remember that the CO's job is care, custody, and control of felons, okay, of criminals, of murderers. So when, you know, you're going to put, you're going to put the CO that you work with that needs to go home to his family above the inmate. When that's the right thing to do.
No, I hear you, but what if a CO misbehaves? And we see that, you know, look, Rikers Island is rife with people getting stuff in and, you know, all kinds of contraband.
That's where my husband works. Yes, I'm very well aware of the things that go on in certain parts of Rikers Island. I know that.
Yeah.
You know, but you're going to have that anywhere. You're going to have that with NYPD. You're going to have that, you know, you're always going to have the bad seed. That doesn't mean that, you know, the whole system
so if your husband saw if your husband saw somebody breaking the law, another CO, would he turn him in?
I can't even speak to that. I'm not my husband. He tries to leave work at work because of the gruesomeness. I'm happy he comes home every day.
Yep.
There's slashings, you know, from inmates to COs. It's a brutal job. It's not like NYPD who catches these guys and then gives them to the COs. The COs go to work every day knowing that they have to deal with criminals every single day. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Every day they deal with criminals. They get pooped on. They get slashed. They get the most net. I can't even tell you the stories that I've heard. It's a gruesome job. Give these COs the credit that they deserve. If there's bad seeds there, fine. But let's not pretend that these prisoners are out at camp.
Okay,
they're in
Cindy,
there for a reason.
Cindy, you're done because we want to get everybody else in, and I thank you. It's a very important telephone call. I appreciate it.
Have a great day.
Yeah, bye. Let's go to Jonathan in Great Barrington. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, how are you, Alan?
Good. What's up?
My point is that everybody, or it at least seems like they feel these guys, like, you know, got a bunch of power tools and a day and a half, saw it a square and threw a pipe and walked out the door. They're in there every day, 24/7, and they could be working on their escape pattern, you know, 1 minute, 2 minutes a day.
Sure.
It doesn't have to be something that was done. I mean, it could have taken years. There's a lot of patience when you have nothing to do but sit around and wait.
Okay. What else you got?
That's it.
Well, that's a good comment. I thank you very much, Jonathan. It's one I've heard before, and I think you're absolutely right. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Let's go to David in Williamstown. David, you're on.
Hi, Alan. It sounds like there's plenty of leads, many that maybe we don't know about because they have someone already charged, but... let's say that they do come up against some roadblocks, or if they didn't have the leads that they have already, would this be a time where an exception would be made that the mega databases that the NSA has, in which we're just restricted by the Patriot Act, such that I understand you probably may be able to be finer with the language on this, that you have to have a specific warrant in order to access things?
Mm.
Would this be a case, because it's so spectacular and the crimes are so heinous, where... you know, it would be allowable to search that database. But the thing that I have in the back of my mind is that when you do that, you start to make exceptions. You may start a slippery slope, and other things could be plucked out of there.
So what's so hard about getting a warrant? You go to a judge.
Yeah, well, what if, in this case, they probably have names, this Mitchell gal plus the two criminals. But let's say that they have some other they come up against some roadblocks, and they scratch in their heads, and they want to go on a fishing expedition.
Well, that's always possible, but I'll tell you something, David. I want to keep moving here.
Yep.
But if that were to happen and the judge happened to be somebody who held things up, I wouldn't want to be that judge.
Gotcha. Go, Alan.
David, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yep. Let's go to Tom in Ankrum. How are things in Ankrum, Tom?
Hi. Things are just great, Alan. Thank you very much. So my comment is, I saw this morning on the news, TV, that one of these escapees, was a pretty accomplished artist. He actually had a previous cellmate that was on television, and they were showing some previous artwork he had done. And it makes me think that they've done something to change their physical appearance.
That's interesting. I saw those pictures that the guy did. They weren't bad. I'll tell you right now. I don't know that they were, you know, advanced art, but they were really good likenesses of Angelina Jolie and Hillary Clinton and the others. This guy's quite an artist.
Yeah, and so right away I said, gosh, it doesn't take much to think that they've done something to physically change how they appear. Also, the second thing is, what I understand, they're making uniforms in a tailor shop.
Yeah, and good point.
And I think they've also made some additional clothing to blend in with maybe the same uniforms of people who are looking for them. Who knows? Because no one saw them leave. There's no telling what they left with.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point. Those are all good points. Tom, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
It. Yep.
Bye-bye.
And we'll talk to Chris in Altoona. Okay, Chris, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a retired correction officer.
Ah.
And I retired from Altoona Correctional last year. Or this year, actually. And I worked at Clinton. And officers are really taken for granted. We work, or in my case, I worked there. And, you know, you're surrounded by 60, 90, 120 inmates by yourself.
Yeah.
And you're walking a balance. You know, you practice care, custody, and control. And the thin blue line is, you're representing the Constitution of the United States and
would you have turned anybody in, one of your colleagues, if you saw them doing something wrong?
Well, I would go through channels doing that, but
that's what I'm talking about.
The point is, you know, I would talk to this person directly. I'd bring it to their attention. The point is, overtime was cut back. A month ago, there was a prison riot in the one of the yards, and inmates were injured. Now, customarily, there's a lockdown.
Whose fault, Ted? Cutting to the chase because we're running out of time. Whose fault was that?
That was the fault of Cuomo telling the Department of Corrections to curtail the expenditure of overtime. So the officers couldn't make cell to cell, you know, they couldn't look through the cells, look for shanks, which are knives. They couldn't look for things out of the ordinary. Possibly they would have found it. Also, there was construction going on in the bathrooms in the cells where these inmates were, and they were in different cells, and they were,
well, they were in different
jackhammering,
cells.
Jackhammering.
Yeah.
So it was perfect time to work.
Ted, I wanted
a lot of errors made.
Ted, I'm so sorry, but I wanted to follow up something. Somebody earlier said he was quite sure they were in the same cell. They weren't, were they?
No, they were not.
Okay. Yeah.
They were apparently honor block inmates. I don't know the details. There's a lot to be answered for, you know.
Chris, sorry.
But I'm not a part of the investigation. The officers, by and large, are doing the best they can under terrible circumstances. Positions of being cut when you're really compromised. You can't be in two places at the time, same time.
So I think Chris,
it was an oversight problem.
Okay, Chris, you're first of all, I want to thank you for calling. Your input has been very germane to this conversation, but we're out of time, and I really do want to thank you for calling. Thanks very much. Okay, let's go to Ted in Avril Park. Ted, you're on.
Hi. How are you doing?
But we got to go real fast. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. First of all, Pastor Rick, they cut that pipe from the outside, not from the inside out. So, you know, that explains a lot about his criticisms relative to the cut. But the point I would like to make is that, you know, given this amount of time and given the country and the weather that they're traveling in, if they have not been picked up and taken somewhere else, there's a pretty good likelihood that they might be dead by now.
Huh.
Who would kill them? It'd be rough out there. I grew up in the Adirondacks.
Who would kill them? You mean they just give the exposure?
The weather.
Hey, I'm so sorry, Ted, but we are out of time. Appreciate your call. Appreciate it. Bruce, I'm sorry. We won't be able to talk to Bruce from Ulster County today, even though it looked like he had something good to say. We're out of time. I want to thank everybody for joining us. Support comes from the Albany Realty Group, a local woman-owned real estate company since 2003, educating and counseling sellers and buyers throughout the real estate transaction. AlbanyRealtyGroup.com and the Hudson Valley Goldsmith New Pulse, specializing in custom-designed fine jewelry made with conflict-free diamonds and recycled gold. Vintage jewelry and the work of over 20 artists, custom work in an open studio, HudsonValleyGoldsmith.com, the Washington County Tourism announcing 22nd annual Whipple City Festival Greenwich this Friday and Saturday, featuring parade music, 5K race, artisans, food, and more, WashingtonNewYorkCounty.com, and SPAC, presenting the Mormon Tabernacle Choir's 360-member ensemble and 68-person orchestra performing one night, Monday, June 29th, SPAC.org for events and tickets. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy, our producers, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall, actually Ray Graff today. Susie Chekai was answering your phone calls. I'm Alan Chartok. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at wmc.org/VoxPop. Stay tuned now for a news update.